Oh, that's right. Good afternoon. Get ready to hold on to your hats this afternoon. I've got the one and only Representative Mike Pitts in the building. I said I wanted somebody in that seat I could talk to about what was going on down in Columbia, and I have him. How you doing today, Mike Pitts?
I'm doing well. I hope you are.
I am doing very well. I tell you what, it's been a interesting session down there in Columbia this year.
Told Jeff Duncan on Saturday that it was the worst session that I've dealt with since I've been there. And if you combined any 3 years previously together, that would include the 08 recession. But
why has it been so bad, Mike?
Well, it's been bad because of a variety of reasons. It's been hard being a legislator this year because of attacks by special interest groups, misinformation. It's been hard because the Senate has been dysfunctional most of the year, and it's been hard because the governor got Potomac fever and decided to attack everybody. That's Mike's perspective.
That's your perspective. Yes, and you made several comments about that early on back in February. Have you and the governor spoke since then?
Not directly.
Not directly? Well, what do you think that, we ended the session without a budget, one of the prime directives of what I think you all go down there for, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's at least 50% of what we are supposed to do.
Right. And yet we don't have a budget at this point. Now, I understand you're on the conference committee that is supposed to be working together with the Senate to try to come up with the budget. So when you all go back on the 16th, that you're ready to propose something. How's that going?
It's not.
Well, this is going to be a short interview this afternoon, or maybe a chatty one. I don't know. It's not. What do you mean it's not?
Well, the conference committee, for those who don't know, is made up of 3 House members, 3 Senate members, and we try to work within the confines of the House version of the budget, Senate version of the budget, come to an agreement that both bodies can accept and move forward. The conferees met yesterday at 9 a.m.
And you're one of them.
I am one of them. Mm-hmm. On the House side, myself, Bill Clyburn from Edgefield, and Brian White, the chairman of Ways and Means, represent the House side, yes. And we met yesterday and started moving forward with what the House thought we were going to go through business and try to work and iron things out, but it became apparent immediately that there was a little bit of infighting on the Senate side and that they were at impasse internally. So the chairman of the conference committee is the senator, Leatherman, the finance chairman, and it was suggested by one of the other conferees on the Senate side that they go back and pass a continuing resolution, as it looked like we might be at an impasse. And I don't know if exactly what the strategy is by the Senate to offer a continuing resolution, but I'm perfectly happy coming home and living off last year's budget constraints.
Now, I thought we had to have a balanced budget. I didn't think you could do continuing resolutions like they do in Washington.
We can do a continuing resolution, and we do have to have a balanced budget. Because we have to have a balanced budget, it means the expenditures could be no greater than what the what was on the agencies in the last year's budget. They could not spend any more, and projects that were one-time projects would no longer be in that budget.
Well, what about the fact that we have this extra money? What happens to the extra money then, Mike?
That's part of the issue, too. We had the newly certified money come in. The House did exactly what the Constitution and statute calls for and did a supplemental bill to the budget to expend those monies. And 50% of those new monies were going directly to roads. And this was the Ways and Means Committee, which is where budget items start, put this together and passed it out to the floor. 50% of that money went directly to roads through the local CTCs. And that is a pretty good idea, because right now you have a oversight committee that is investigating the operations of DOT, and you also have a legislated audit going on to make sure that money's being spent right. So we are looking into both efficiency, personnel-wise, and fiscal efficiency both. So sending that money to the CTCs with the restriction that it had to be spent on state roads, I think is a good way to go.
And then the head of DOT just stepped down.
Well, that didn't surprise me.
Why didn't it surprise you?
Because she didn't know what she was doing to begin with.
That sounds positive, Mike.
Well, it's the truth, but I didn't appoint her. The governor did.
The governor did. Well, what is going to be, all that aside, what is going to happen with the roads? I mean, I'm sure you hear from your constituents every day, what are we going to do about the roads? Because they are just getting worse and worse. So what are we going to do?
Well, the House tried to solve the problem. We passed a roads bill. You and I discussed that the last time I was here. We passed a roads bill that dealt with the issue. In our budget, there's money in there for roads. In the supplemental that we will be dealing with on Tuesday of this coming week, over $150 million go to roads. And if you count what goes to Volvo out of that, which is roads project also, and infrastructure, that's almost two-thirds of the money that goes to roads or road projects. So the Senate has in their lap three ways to fund roads at this point, but they passed the only one they passed is the budget, and they didn't put nearly as much money into roads in the budget as we did.
Well, is the money, the $150 million, is that going to make a difference as far as the roads? If I remember correctly reading, they were going to divide that $150 amongst the counties in the state and let them work on doing the projects. Have we kicked it back to the counties?
Well, the counties would be able to determine, the county CTC would be able to determine the priority of roads within their area. They would actually spend the money under the same formula they do now. And in the hearings, DOT hearings, it became pretty clear that the counties were more efficient in spending that money than DOT was.
But as far as hiring the contractors and everything, where would that come? Would it just be that Greenwood County would say, we need road A, B, and C worked
then
on?
Then they would bid out the contractors just like they do currently. The money that comes back to the CTC, part of it's designated for county roads, part of it for state roads. So it would not change anything about how that process works. It would simply give them more money, but would direct that all of it, the new money, be spent on state roads. That's where the travel is. That's where the need is. It couldn't be spent on federally funded highways, and it could not be spent on county roads. It would have to be spent on those state roads that are suffering.
But how long would it take for something to happen? I mean, wasn't it 500, whatever it was we put in the budget last year through that intrastate bank?
That's
a year later.
Well, the process is slow.
Well, can't something be done to change that, Mike?
Don't really need to change the process. You just need to change the efficiency of the process. And, yes, if we had the money to put, it goes back to what you and I talked about once before. How much is really needed to fix our roads? You keep hearing $400 million.
Yeah, I do.
That's not even close to half of what it would take. What the external recommendations, not governmental recommendations, mm-hmm. but what the private industry says would take to fix our roads. You're looking at $1 billion to $1.2 billion for a decade per year.
A year?
A year.
A billion per year?
Yes. To repair roads and bridges to the level they need to be repaired to. You got to remember, we've spent 40 years putting very little, if any, state money into roads.
Wow. Well, there's no way, you know, that's like looking at a business. There's no way that we can make that work, is there, Mike?
Yes, we could, but you'd see out-of-state contractors coming in to help our contractors. I'll tell you, if we did what was necessary to start repairing our roads to the level they need to be repaired, Satterfield Construction would be happy for the next decade. And so would a lot of other people
that
would end up going back to work at Satterfield or new hires to Satterfield. And I'm just using them because they are a local construction company. But, yes, they would have a decade's worth of work ahead of them.
But where would the money come from?
That was part of the debate in the Rhodes bill. In the House version, it came from an increase in the gas tax and increase in the
fees. Well, some fees.
There was some increase in fees, but there was the increase in the sales tax on cars. And
what was what, from 300 to 500?
300 to 500.
500. Right. And that would have made up enough dollar difference to finance $1 billion a year?
No.
I just thought I'd clarify here.
No, it would have gotten us close to the halfway mark. It would have gotten us over the $400 million that everyone keeps throwing around.
You know, one of the things that everybody talks about is it's great. We just got Volvo coming in. We've got a lot of our big industries, you know, are transportation-oriented. The tires, the cars, the, you know, this type of thing. And yet, how can we continue to grow? This is a question I hear from a lot of people. How can we continue to grow our economy if our roads and bridges and the infrastructure is not keeping up?
We can't.
So
by the same level that we can't, you know, I'm not here today to beat up on the governor.
Right.
But I'm going to point out some facts. The governor is one of the best recruiters in the nation. She's a great cheerleader and a great salesperson to go out and sell this state in economic development.
Sure.
But when it comes to the strategy to support that industry once it gets here, she's a dismal failure. She does not want to put the money in the proper places to make that happen. And the Volvo issue is a prime example. The bond bill that she screamed until she scared enough freshmen and others away from was to put that infrastructure in place to train those employees at technical colleges and in high school.
Sure.
And it takes a trained workforce, and that's the biggest problem. ZF.
Right, ZF, yeah.
In Lawrence.
Yes.
Volvo, mm-hmm. Boeing. That's the biggest problem those industries are having is getting ready-to-work workforce.
And they keep, I know Piedmont Tech works with ZF a lot, training, and they're constantly turning over and training. And I also understand that ZF is, you know, moving forward, but they don't have the workforce that really they need to be able to make it big.
No, and they're killing the workforce they do have, and I don't mean that literally.
Right.
But they are overworking the workforce they do have to meet production demands because we are not able to train workers fast enough, which was something that was in the budget. One of Mike Pitts's pork barrel projects was to...
Pork barrel? Come on now, Mike.
Phase 3 of the training center for ZF, which is a new building with modern technology to train the employees, which would give Piedmont Tech the ability to train up to 90 in a cycle as opposed to 30 in a cycle. And then we can meet the needs. But the governor says that would be how did she term it, maxing out the credit card?
I did not understand that about the credit card. I mean, the comparison between a credit card, a bond issue, I think you and I talked about our bond was the bonds that were out there were either paying off or would pay off in this year.
That's
originally
correct.
Isn't that right? Yes.
Our debt service with what the house did, the debt service would have been no more than half of what it currently is. So in terms of a house payment, instead of a $500 house payment, we would have had a $250 house payment, but we would have been making a much needed upgrades to buildings like the Greenwood Armory that the roof leaks on, and the installation of phase three of Piedmont Tech's training center.
And a lot of different things all across the strait.
A children's hospital at MUSC. There were no projects. I was joking about pork barrel projects. There were no projects. Everything in that bond bill was statewide infrastructure, either maintenance or new facility like the children's hospital or the facility that was promised to Bridgestone Firestone when Governor Haley recruited them in here. Volvo, let's talk about Volvo.
Okay, that's the one that's on everybody's mind right now since it's a brand new project.
In the supplemental bill, we being the House, put money in to do the road interchange exchange from the interstate to Volvo. That also includes sewer lines, water lines. Now, that is in that area is a depressed area of the state, which means that there would be much more benefit by that project going in than just to Volvo. It would actually impact all of Berkeley County because of water line, sewer line, and development that could come along those lines, which is a good thing. It's an offshoot, so it's a good investment. What was a bad investment was the same governor that said we don't want to max out our credit cards, wants to borrow $123 million to pay for all that infrastructure at a high rate. Economic development bonds are extremely high. The bond that we were looking at for deferred maintenance, et cetera, was the lowest it's been in 50 years.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't it have a balloon payment at the end? Isn't that the thing that everybody is concerned? I mean, that y'all were concerned about, and I'm concerned about too.
A little over $80 million worth is what it would cost the taxpayers in addition to the $123 million on interest and balloon payment. That's correct. And if you want to talk about maxing it out, that's maxing out the credit card because it would put us at the absolute debt limit on infrastructure, on economic development bonds. That means no new industry. Now, in the House version of the supplemental bill, the chairman and I both are recommending that we pay the entire $123 million out of the quote-unquote new money while we're making a cash payment. No interest to the taxpayer. It'll all be paid off front, and it's money that's at hand at this time. And as you stated, if we put $1 billion on the table to fix roads, we can't fix roads because it takes a period of time to put the bids out, to get the contractors in place, and start the work.
Exactly.
So it's a slow build-up process. It's like starting up a big machine. It takes it a while to wind up, but once it winds up, it's very productive, and that's the way the roads would be if we had the money to pump into them, as I stated.
Are they going, but we don't have the money, so are there jobs in the pipeline ready to roll now? Do you know?
Jobs?
I mean, contractor jobs for the roads.
Yes, they are.
I mean, are they ready to roll?
Off the money that we initially put in, yes. I'm seeing paving going on now. As a matter of fact, that company I talked about earlier, I saw Satterfield Construction repaving Highway 49 in Lawrence County that goes from Highway 221 to the interstate, I-26. And they were repaving it during this session. So, yes, those contracts are now going out and are in the process. So those jobs are being done. It's just, it's been a slow process.
You know, the other thing I think we're looking at with the roads and everything, not to belabor it, but is the fact that we've gone so long without doing things. Some of these roads, you're just not going to be able to just repave.
That's correct. Some of them have damage that's into the base. And, you know, I threw the director under the bus of DOT earlier, and that was part of it. When Shannon Riley and I met with her to talk about the issues along with the Speaker of the House over some of the projects that they had done that had problems, roads that have been repaved or reclaimed within the last 2 years, you already had problems in the center of that was into and below the base. And the contractor, the private contractor that we were brought, that we had brought in to give us unbiased advice, said, I asked him, if you had paved this the way DOT did and you were facing a lawsuit over the issue, how would you resolve it to keep from going to court? And he gave us the explanation. He said, your problem is you've eaten all the way into the base.
So now that becomes a very expensive proposition.
Exactly, and very time-consuming.
Yeah.
And if we don't address the roads issue quickly, we're going to have interstates in that condition, and our major thoroughfares are going to be in that condition.
Well, we are here with the one and only Representative Mike Pitts. Hey, if you've got a question or have something to weigh in on, just give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're going to join South Carolina News in progress.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. Good afternoon. I tell you what, there's a lot of conversation going on at this table right here. If walls could talk, woo! But my very special guest this afternoon, Mike Pitts, I am so pleased to be able to get him to take a time. Now, you're going out of town tomorrow. I mean, you just were down in Columbia yesterday, and now you're here on my show. I really appreciate it, Mike.
You're quite welcome. Your folks have been calling me for 3 weeks steady trying to get in touch. And is it Lori or Lauren?
Lauren, right.
Lori,
yeah.
And I have been playing phone tag back and forth. And it was simply because of my schedule. But when the Senate decided to end discussions on
the budget. Kick the can down the road. Isn't that a famous one we have expression?
Kick the can down the road yesterday. It gave me a day without obligation today. So I've been in my Lawrence office trying to catch up on in-district stuff and had the opportunity to be here. You know, people, when I get calls in my office, if I'm in my office, I answer the phone. Barbara doesn't answer the phone. And I constantly get, can I speak to Representative Pitts? You are. Well, I never expected you to answer the phone. Well, I called yesterday and I got you.
That's right.
Didn't expect you to answer the phone. But finally here, and I, as always, Ann, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk directly to constituency.
Sure. And that's what we're doing today. We're talking about all the different issues facing the state. If, I mean, as we look at what is moving forward, I understand your pot bill got kind of kicked to the curb.
Yeah, It is in a stupor at the
it's
moment.
It's in a stupor. Yeah. Now, that was the one that said if, what was it, an ounce or less of pot would not be a felony?
It said an ounce or less would not be a criminal violation. It would be a civil violation, much like a speeding ticket. It would be a fine.
Right. So that one got kicked to the curb. And then, of course, we had the concealed weapons having to have a permit. There was talk of putting that down as far as not needing a permit. You should just be able to carry.
That's called constitutional carry. That is correct.
And
that passed the House and went to the Senate.
And again, you know, this is sounding like the Senate up there in Washington, D.C. You know, we used to have Harry Reid up there running interference, and not much was happening up there in Washington, D.C. And now we have the Senate being the issue down here, according to a House member, Mike Pitts.
That would be my version. As I stated, that's Mike's view. And you can go back and archive the Senate's last 3 weeks and watch on video and determine whether my view is your view or not. But when Tom Davis, senator from the coast, takes the podium and spends the last 2 weeks of session knowing that a budget was on the table, knowing that roads needed fixing, knowing that all these issues were out there, and he locks the Senate down for 2 weeks, and they allow him to lock it down for 2 weeks.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Why didn't they shut him down?
Because it's the gentleman's court.
The gentleman's court.
Yeah, it's the upper chamber. They don't fight like we do in the House.
They're not scrappy like they are down in the House, right?
The lower chamber has a tendency to say, "You've made your point. Sit down and be quiet."
Is that what they say? Be quiet?
No. But our rule, you know, seriously, our rules are different. Our rules do not allow one individual to shut down the show like the Senate does. The Senate's rules are very archaic, and they need to be addressed. One person, whether you like a particular senator, whether you like the issue, which side you fall on, anyone has to agree that one individual should not be able to shut down all of state government, period.
Exactly, period. Yes, exactly. Well, you know, one of the things that has been becoming apparent down there in the Senate is there's some, I guess we could say, some infighting for the overall control. Who's on first, who's in charge, right?
Well, from my perspective, there are four different factions fighting each other. You have the hard right group that Senator Tom Davis comes from that I was talking about on the Republican side. You have Minority Leader Senator Setzler trying to lead the Democratic Party, the minority party in the House. Within that party, you have the Black Caucus led by Gerald Malloy trying to dictate direction from the black perspective, or the minority within the minority perspective. And then you have old-line Senator Leatherman.
It's on the Republican side.
From the Republican side, who, for lack of a better term, leads from the left because he is one of the guys that changed parties and put the Republicans in control. And then by the same, right in the middle of that mix, you have Senator Larry Martin trying to lead moderate Republicans. So you actually have a huge disarray with different factions. And it's hard. It's like watching British Parliament with 12,
without the Whigs?
Without 12 different, I mean, with so many different parties
factions
in there. And they sit by party in British Parliament and German Parliament. They sit by their factions, whether you're in the Conservative Party, the Green Party, or whatever. You sit with that party and those trying to get enough of those groups together to move anything is difficult. And that's what watching our Senate was like this year.
So I guess we're not making any predictions on the budget, other than we probably are going to have a continuing resolution.
I would say we will have a continuing resolution. I've not thrown the baby out with the bathwater and said that we can't come to an agreement on the budget. It would be better for this state and with immediate needs if we could get together and move forward. Now, we have put all of those things on the table. Mm-hmm. Some of them the Senate has not addressed at all, so they will have to work in something that is highly unusual for them, and that's rapid fashion.
Now, what about Governor Haley and all this issues going on here? Where's Governor Haley in all this? MIA? No. Just
well, she's thrown a couple of bombs out there, and this particular year, they had nuclear effect instead of minimal effect. The bond bill being one, and saying that she wants all the money spent on roads is one, because, as you stated very clearly, if we put all that money into roads, it'll sit there because it can't be geared up and moved forward at one time. And we do, although roads are the primary number one issue at this moment, there are still other needs in the state that money needs to go to. So she's, you know, Governor Haley said take this newfound money,
right,
and fix the roads, all of it.
Okay.
She said take all this new money and pay down debt.
That's the second thing. Okay.
She said take all this new money and do what you were going to do with the Capital Reserve bill and fix our armories.
Okay, that's three different things with the same amount of money?
With the same amount of money.
Okay.
And she named,
was she giving you guys choices down there? Use one of these three things would be good?
No, she was saying this is what you've got to do with this money, and then this is what you've got to do with this money, and this is what you've got to do with this money. You take all four or the entire portion and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take the entire portion and do this. And by the time you get to the fourth project, you've spent the money four times, and you just can't do that. You can't spend $1 four times. Once I give you my dollar today before I leave here,
I can't spend it.
I can't go to Burger King next door and spend it again.
You are absolutely right. Hey, I'm here with Mike Pitts. I hope you all are finding this interesting. I am glad to at least have some answers here. I still don't see any solutions, but I see some answers. And hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and we are talking with Representative Mike Pitts. Of course, he's from over there in Lawrence and part of Greenwood here, and that's why it's so great to have my straight shooter sitting across from me this afternoon. You know, one of the issues that has been not only here in the state but across the country, up there in the Senate and everything, they've been talking about body cameras as a way to tamp down some of the things that have been going on out there. Mike, where is the state, where is the House on this, and what's your personal opinion on body cameras?
Personal opinion on body cameras is a camera can be a good cop's best friend and a bad cop's nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteered for in-car camera, was one of the first four in the Greenville Police Department when the pilot project was done for car cameras. So I know what the camera can save you during complaints and in court, because it records exactly what you're doing. The problem is with body cameras is most of the body cameras clip on with an alligator clip.
Right.
When you need the footage, there's generally been a physical confrontation prior to.
So they could come off, so but knocked
your
out.
Your badge, your tie, if you wear a tie, your badge, your nameplate, and about everything else can be on the ground as opposed to where it should be after a physical confrontation. So you've got different levels and cost of camera that can go from somewhere in $400-$600 range to very high. And the best camera is one that attaches through the pocket to a plate inside the pocket so that if the
there's a scuffle or something happens.
If there's a scuffle, the shirt, the pocket's got to be ripped off for the camera to be gone. And that can happen too, but not nearly as often as just knocking off an alligator clip. I think in haste, we could be moving toward a knee-jerk overreaction. My personal opinion, and this is one I shared with the House Minority, he's not the minority leader, he's a African-American legislator from Charleston. Anyway, he's the one that was pushing the bill originally, and we both agreed that the money probably would be better spent on paying a higher salary to get better police officers, not knocking the guys we have, but in the future, if you're going to attract people that are going to put up with the pressure of being a police officer, you're going to have to pay them. And we do not in this state pay police officers. And the second thing is we need to train better. We need advanced training that we don't supply.
Should that be from across the state? I mean, yeah. The state should pay for this, or local police?
Well, the training is paid for by both.
Okay.
The training academy is paid for by both. But the cost of body cameras, that was one of the things I was very adamant about during this process, is if we are going to put a policy in place to require all law enforcement officers in the state to wear a body camera, then the state should pay for it. If we're making that mandate, we should not send it as an unfunded mandate.
How much would it cost to put cameras in all the state, local and state of state?
Fiscal impact for this year alone would be somewhere around $35 million.
How much would it be just to do state employees, I guess state troopers?
About a third of that.
About a third of that. So to make a mandate would be, to push it back to the counties would be cost prohibitive.
It would be around $20 million to local law enforcement.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
And then how do you control what type of cameras and what type of protocol and like how long you have to store it and how you maintain it and all this type of stuff? Is there anything in place for that, or is it just, well, we do it this way in Greenwood County and Abbeville does it this way and Charleston does it another way?
It's the way it currently is, and some departments are doing a very good job. I've talked to several departments, chiefs and sheriffs who have those in place. And some are doing a very good job. Some have bought equipment that is less than desirable. And policies are different. Data storage policies are different. The bill that we actually passed said that...
That was in the House, folks, Senate here.
This bill actually passed both bodies.
The House and the Senate?
And the Senate, that's correct.
Did it make it to the governor's desk?
It has... I don't know if it's been signed yet or not.
Okay.
But what it did was directed the Law Enforcement Training Council, which is made up of state agency heads and local sheriffs and chiefs of police, with the director of the Training Academy, to move forward over the next 270 days with a development of a plan for statewide implementation of body cameras, which would say this is the policy that you have to follow whether you're local or state law enforcement, as to how long to store data, what type camera to use, et cetera. And the policies of when the camera should be on. There are a myriad of things out there that you have to consider before putting it forward. And again, as I stated, you don't want to do a knee-jerk overreaction, just put money out hodgepodge and have people buying bells and whistles and people buying solid cameras and no consistent policy.
You know, one of the things that I would think would be very difficult in today's the police force, the sheriffs, the state patrol and everything, is with all that has happened on the national scene and even down there in Charleston, is how to move forward. It has to be difficult for them, because you train to be able to react in a situation when this is happening, and to, do we have a lot of them questioning, should I go this far, should I stop?
You're going to have police officers hurt, because when you question whether or not you should react,
right,
it's too late to react.
And of course, you were a police officer.
First of all, you've got to hire quality people. Second of all, you've got to train them properly and extensively. And third, you've got to give those people the ability to enforce the law without fear of the system eating them once they do their job. People like myself did the job for years and worked two extra jobs to raise a family because we loved that line of work.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are gone. With the pressure that's on law enforcement today, with video cameras, with everything a police officer does being videoed and Monday morning quarterbacked, you're going to have to pay people to do the job and pay them adequately. Because people doing it just for the love of the job are not going to do it with that kind of pressure. You're putting yourself at risk. You're putting your family at risk when you do that now. And I've told several young people that have come to me in the last few weeks and asked me about a career in law enforcement, I've advised them to go elsewhere.
That's sad, isn't it? I mean, truthfully, that is sad, isn't it?
It is, because do you want to ride on a highway with no patrolman?
And when you need someone, do you want somebody not to be there?
Do you want to have someone trying to break down your door and have no one to call? And I don't. I praise the folks that wear the badge today and are doing it in the current environment. And I pledge to them that I will fight every step of the way to get them paid properly, both on the local level and state level.
Absolutely. I mean, I just can't imagine it, you know. And while we're speaking of law enforcement, then, of course, on the other side is what is happening in the criminal justice system itself and with our jails and everything. I understand we just don't have enough, and we're not able to really enforce things that are put on the books to be able to enforce, because we've got such a huge population.
Well, sentencing reform...
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Mike.
Sentencing reform is working on that, and it's taking nonviolent criminals out and putting them under supervision of probation and parole, which is much, much less costly. But in that process, we've got to hire more probation and parole agents, and going to the problem we were talking about with pay, we can't hire them fast enough.
Nor is the money available?
Yes, the money's available. We gave, in last year's budget, we gave probation, pardon, and parole 44 new slots, and they have trouble just keeping up with the turnover, much less hiring new people. Because, and then when you hire 40 new people, you've got a window of training and a window of OJT before they can function on their own.
Well, you know, it all comes, it seems to, it revolves around two things, training and money.
It is, from you know, my perspective.
And not only that, but also for the well-being of our economy here in South Carolina. We started about talking about workers and having the training available. That comes back to having the money available to be able to train and have the right type of people and to pay them accordingly.
That's correct.
So, how you feeling here at the end of the session, Mike Pitts? You know, it's been, I'm sure, a wearing session this time.
I'm optimistic.
I didn't expect that one now, Mike.
I know I've not sounded like it today. I've been putting facts on the table. But I'm optimistic that the conference committee will come together and compromise on a budget to move forward. I'm optimistic for the state. We have industry wanting to come to this state. We have part of the tools in place. We need to put the rest of the tools in place. South Carolina's future looks bright, in my opinion. But we've got to force some people to make things work.
Well, you know, they always say that politics is on the local level, you know, and of course we've got our own local politicians and everything right here, and then we climb up to the state, and we need the state to come together to make it all work out for our state.
I agree.
Well, Mike Pitts, as always, it is such a pleasure to have you sitting across from me. I don't get to see you enough, but hey, I'll take what I can get. Good luck, and I certainly hope we can have you back after the budget and everything is done. The budget now, not the continuing resolution, to really talk about how it works out.
I'll be glad to come back, and I hope I can fulfill the optimism. I said earlier today during an interview, Ann, that some people see the glass half full, some half empty, and then there's the rare individual that'll pick the glass up, drink all that's in it, and say the glass is empty.
Yes, that's true too, Mike. Hey, Mike Pitts, Representative Mike Pitts, have a good trip out of town, and I guess we'll be watching what's happening down there next week.
Thank you, and as always, to the constituents out there, I'm available. My numbers are listed.
That's right. Give him a call. He likes abuse. No, just teasing. Is that right, Mike?
That's why I left police work and became a politician.
Oh, because you like abuse. All right. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.